I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer, and in the last few months, I've been working with Laura Connolly. Laura's career has included advocacy and organizational leadership for victims of domestic violence. It's provided her with knowledge about the need for human-centered social design. And we want to thank the Northwest Minnesota Women's Fund for a grant that was called Nevertheless, She Persisted, Honoring Women Who Fight All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. And we applied for that grant, and we got it, and what we wanted to do was talk and to listen to women. We were able to get together with groups of women in Bemidji and Grand Rapids and listen to their thoughts. Laura Connolly joins us now. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure having you, Laura. So why the heck did you do this project specifically?
I think that Heidi and I started talking about kind of the portrayal of women in media, and we just wanted to have an understanding of on the ground, right? So what's the ultimate impact that the stories about women's lives and what's happening to them throughout media is having on women actually?
And how far did we go back on how media has kind of had this issue with women?
Well, I think that like when you start listening to their stories, it depends on where they are in their lives. So we talked with women, you know, that in the ages of, 18 to 75.
Right.
And so the older women were able to talk about the time when, you know, maybe they weren't even portrayed in the media.
Yeah. Was that what you were asking?
Yeah. How long has it been around?
Who's been in power?
Yeah.
So I think it's always
been forever.
Right.
I just wonder if when you look at old media. So tell us about the people that you met with. You met with my basketball team, which is 18, 19, 20. Then what other ages did you do?
We met with a group of women that were, some women were retired. Laura had said we met with women up to 75. We also met with women like right in the middle of their careers, I would say. So various ages and backgrounds that came together. So
the natural question to me is, are there similarities in every group?
Yeah, so when you do focus groups with people and you're trying to understand what's their lived experience and right, because that in part helps you understand what the impact is on their life of the media, the education, you start listening for themes that they have, because then those themes are the things that are an indicator to what you can ultimately start to work on to change. So yeah, we generated probably a handful of themes.
Right. And I would say, so let's talk a little bit about one of them. Across the board, women talked about that they felt like there were higher expectations of them in society, in school, in their workplace. What did you hear from that, Laura?
So when I was listening to that sort of stuff, it sounds like things like I have to do better in school. There's more pressure for me to be a certain way at work.
Because they have to work harder to get there versus maybe a man?
I don't know if I would put it that way, but I would put it in terms of, so if like women would talk about when they would be in a meeting at work, right, with, let's say like a woman works with a group of men, she typically is going to take up less space in the room than anybody else and acquiesce on some level to the men in the room because she has been socially constructed to believe that she's less than. So part of what women are dealing with across the board and what we heard was this idea that there's a constant fight, whether it's conscious or not, against this idea that you're less than others.
You know, you talked about a workplace situation. I think we heard it from a couple of women who just talked about having meetings at work and that they found that they were often cut off by men. And a woman had come into our group, our nighttime focus group, and she was pretty proud because she had been in a meeting that day and she said, I told him, I am not done speaking yet, she said in a meeting to him. And I've talked to men who have said they realize that they do that. They're just starting to realize that they tend to cut women off and women don't always make that fight for that space.
Is that intentional, you think? I mean, they just
this is where Laura is fascinating to kind of like she unpacks it for us.
I mean,
us.
So this person maybe cut her off, but just even aware that he's cutting her off.
So it isn't that it's intentional. I mean, I'm sure there are some people in the world who are intentional about that sort of stuff, but it's more the fact that there's a level of entitlement that goes unseen, right? Like you are just granted the ability to take up more space than other people by the way that our society is organized. And so we all kind of fall into our roles and our places within the structure that we've been assigned.
Hmm. We heard from women who said they felt like they were always, the way they put it was, they're responsible for what happens in the room. And so they said, even if I'm, you know, the boss at a place, when we have a meeting or we invite people in, I'm the one making coffee. I'm the one making sure all this stuff gets done, even though I have this position. If a male was in that position, they would have somebody else take care of all that stuff. And they felt like there was an extra burden on them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was kind of another one of the themes that came out was this idea that, so part of when you're looking at what's the impact on women's lives with the media, you're also looking at things like, you know, there have been women's movements in our country. What did that do for women? Did it help them? Did it make things better? And did it ultimately have the impact that it was intended to have? And across the board, women talked about this notion that, yeah, like at some point in my life, I realized that I could choose the job that I wanted. I could pursue things that I was interested in, which is very different than the older women talking about. I knew that the only option I had was to be a secretary, a nurse, or a teacher, right? At some point in our society, there was a shift from that. But when that shift happened, the women didn't get to give up anything. Right. So they're still going to take care. They're going to be the primary people raising the kids, doing the housework. And I know this is changing. And, you know, we want to acknowledge the fact that men are doing a lot more in that regard today than they were before. But it's still an inequitable balance of responsibility.
You know, what amazed me is I was fortunate enough to sit in, and I didn't know if it was appropriate or enough, but it was my basketball team, and they know me very well, and it didn't inhibit them. It stopped them from talking. But I learned so much, and there's so much pressure on young women. And the one word that was used so much is overthinking. And when they were done with this, I want to tell you, when they were done with this session with you guys, they made a conscious effort to tell me that they got together and talked about it for probably an additional hour. So that is a huge success thing. But overthinking, let's give examples of overthinking. Overthinking to one of them is, how do I need to look today?
Right.
How do I simply need to look today? One would say, I'd throw on some sweatpants, and the other one said, I would spend 40 minutes getting prepped on what to look like and what clothing I should wear for these reasons.
They felt like either choice was not the right choice sometimes. If they didn't dress up or wear makeup, they were treated a certain way, like they weren't trying as a woman. But if they really did get gussied up, they were treated like they're trying to do something. We heard from people that boyfriends were jealous. Why are you trying to attract other men? Is that why you're wearing lipstick today? Or is that why that's going on? So, yeah, it was really shocking to me with the younger group of women. Something that stood out to me, and I've talked to you about it, Laura, is that I had forgotten about kind of that fear factor that is built into this your system when you're younger, when you're at college age. And there still is so much. I remember so clearly being told to not be alone, you know, when I was in college in a city, that I was supposed to call campus police to walk to my car, or I needed to carry mace, or I need, you know, because there are all these horrible things out there that could happen in the big city. I hadn't thought about that in a while, and I thought that, you know, they're at a small college in a rural area, that wouldn't be a problem for them. But the fear is still there and pounded into them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that kind of played into this overthinking idea, right? Because women are constantly negotiating their safety, whether they realize it or not.
We mostly don't realize it. I think that's a big deal.
And they are talking about things like, you know, you don't go to a party by yourself. Like, that's a stupid idea. Which, really?
Yeah.
Even one other person isn't enough. You need to go in a group, is what we heard from them. So tell us a little bit about kind of, help us understand this idea of fear. Because, you know, to some extent you might just say, well, women should be aware of their surroundings. There might be bad things out there, and you should be paying attention so that you will be safe. But what does it mean on a bigger level to you?
Well, I think that what it means on a bigger level is that you're not ultimately free, right? So you don't get to just be in the world in a way where you're free to express who you are. You're always adapting what you are and the way in which you show up in the world because there's this level of something could happen. So in the fear, right? So like lots of people talk about fear and they say, well, is it real? You know, like, are you being dramatic about the fact that there's this fear going on? But the truth is that we all have a lot of reasons to have it because you'd be hard pressed to sit around in a group of 10 women and not have the majority of them have been sexually harassed, sexually abused, assaulted in a domestic violent relationship. I mean, really. And so that ultimately then makes it a legitimate reason that we're living with that and having that take up part of the space in our head.
So one of the words also is harassment. We talked about that. And you talked about movements. Women have had movements that have maybe worked and not worked. How is this movement going on now with the Harvey Weinstein and things like that? Is that a movement that we're going to look back on and say, this was huge?
I feel like it's huge in the sense that it's given like coverage and space and women are coming forward and talking about stuff that they probably never felt like they could before. But the hugest thing for me in my mind about it is that when you get enough people talking and listening, you suddenly see like, okay, this is a social problem. This isn't like something was individually wrong with me as a person, because that's usually what women do with that sort of stuff, right? This is my fault. I did something wrong. I'm too big. I'm too small. I'm too emotional. We do that versus, oh, wow, this is happening to a lot of people, which means this is flourishing because it's designed to happen, our society, right?
Yeah.
We're talking with Laura Connolly. She and I held some focus groups in northern Minnesota in the last couple months to talk to women about their lives. And part of the, we didn't want to go into this and just, as I tend to do, go to something and record stories. Because, you know, with the Me Too movement, it's a very different story to be an actress who comes out, how difficult that must be, but to have that kind of clout and power behind you, than it is to be a woman in northern Minnesota to say, hey, I'm being sexually harassed on the job. And we did meet with some women that have been going through that and had gone through proper channels that are there, you know, legally for women if they are being harassed on the job. Can you talk more about their experience in that way?
So the women that were in our groups that had actually filed harassment claims and went through that process, it was not an easy process. I kind of got the sense from them that maybe they would never do that again on some level, right? Because
right.
It wasn't like it was this ultimate justice happened as a result of it.
Or they even wish they maybe hadn't done it.
Yeah, right. Because there was so much backlash from the people who were supporting the person who was harassing them. You know, a lot of times when stuff like that is happening to women in workplaces, you're getting this pressure from other women too that's like, could you just be quiet? Like, we don't want to rock the boat. There's a lot of reasons why it's hard for people to come forward with that sort of stuff. But I think, Heidi, like in all the groups, everybody pretty much on some level had experienced some of that harassment,
mm-hmm.
which is sad.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what these groups of women seem to want for in the future, what changes they wanted to see happen.
Yeah, so part of what we were trying to figure out with them, you know, is what can we do about it? Right. So how can we change this? What's our role in changing all of this stuff? And across the board, they talked about spending more time with groups of women. This notion of solidarity is a real thing. You know, if you stick together, you have more power to affect change. If we support each other versus tear each other down, you know, there's great value in a society to keep people divided.
What do you mean?
Well, because then when people come together, they suddenly name things and they see all these social forces that are operating in their lives that are causing this stuff to happen. And then they think, oh, okay, we stick together. We're going to change this. We're going to demand more equity. We're going to demand to be able to live lives that are free, that are safe, that are flourishing.
Can you tell us more about how it is kind of in our society for women to not have solidarity or to not be kind to each other? Where does that come from?
So our society, since it's hierarchically organized, right? So you have people at the top and you have people at the bottom. Part of how you keep that structure in place is keeping the people at the bottom apart. So you create ways in which there's horizontal hostility, you know? So that's like, I'm going to cut you down, Heidi, you know, because in my mind, I have come to understand that the only way to have power is to keep people down, you know, because there's a myth out there that there's a finite pool of power in the world and only certain people can access it. So it sets up this competitive nature between women, which really, you know, if we all came together, like just imagine if today every woman in our country did nothing. Right? It would shut the place down.
Right, right. Yeah,
you know,
you didn't make the meals, you didn't show up at work, you know, didn't do all the things you're supposed to do.
Yeah, which is actually in Iceland, they did that in, I think it was 75, because the women were like, we want to have equal access to positions of power. So they organized and did nothing for a day and it shut the place down and they regrouped.
So Heidi, you've probably never, haven't done support groups like this, but Laura, you have. Were there any things that just caught you off guard or really surprised you? I mean, I'm assuming you probably knew a lot of what was the dialogue was going to be like, but was there anything that really maybe rocked you a little bit?
I guess for me, probably the younger group, like that one had the biggest impact on me because you're always like so hopeful that it's going to be easier for them.
Or it's gotten better since you were that age.
Yeah. And it's not. In some ways, it almost seemed harder. Which made me sad. Like, I felt kind of in my heart sad for a while after that one. Especially because,
you know, a lot of them maybe hadn't had a lot of experience working yet, but the work experience they had found, you know, they were fearful in their workplaces. There was harassment. They were already used to it, and they're only, like, 18 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
But the thing that bothered me the most is, because I'm around these specific girls, they're strong. They're beautiful, they're hardworking, and they just are so concerned about their image and they're not pretty enough and they're not this enough. And that's sad. They're 18.
I know. Like a lot of them are dieting.
Yeah.
Like, what? Why?
I think everybody raised their hand.
Yeah.
On that one.
Yeah.
It was good to see that. So there's a group of older women that came out of kind of the feminist movement. And they made choices. They said, you know, if they went to college, they were supposed to go there just to find a husband. And they made choices. They weren't going to do that. They were going to do different jobs. They were going to stick together. And so we had a core group of women that have done that in northern Minnesota. And that was really good, I think, to see. I think when we started talking to them more, they were also hoping it would have had a bigger impact on the generations after them. And they weren't quite sure if it had, but they had this solidarity. They talked about helping each other parent and workplace and food and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I don't know. It's got something, it skipped some generations or some, you know, it wasn't enough solidarity or there's, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that.
Well, I think like part of it, so with the younger women, they most certainly were sticking together, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, they were a team, first of all. And then you could just tell there was a lot of sisterly love in there. Like they were going to take care of each other. But they didn't name that, right? So we kind of named that for them, right, Heidi?
That's probably why they went on to have a conversation. No one had asked them questions like this before.
Yeah, and we said, stick together. You guys, this is a good thing that you're doing for each other.
Do you think that if you put the older women, the 70s or the 65 pluses, in a room with the 18-year-old girls, do you think the 18-year-old girls would learn a lot and make them better? And maybe vice versa?
Yeah, if they were open to it, for sure. Absolutely.
Because the older people, they've lived this life and they've seen it all, perhaps. That would be fun to bring them together.
Yeah, there was one conversation that was pretty interesting, and I think all the women that were at these groups agreed. that women tend to apologize for things they don't even do. Mm-hmm. There's always this, I'm sorry, you know, and I think that might be something we come away from this as you're listening to this, you know, that maybe you don't have that group of women that you meet with regularly. And we're hoping that women will do this more. We'll find their kind of core group of people that they can trust. And they also pay attention to the language they use through their day. And if they are apologizing, why do we do that?
Well, I think that's just another thing, right? So we're all kind of walking around with part of our mind is taken up with this story that we did something wrong. We're at fault for mm-hmm. the problems of the world. I mean, it's as basic as like if you go out to eat and you get the wrong food, your women have a tendency to be like, excuse me, I'm sorry, could I, right? Which is a very different thing than if you just are feel like you're entitled to have things go the way they're supposed to go for you. And it's across the board. Just sit in a group of women and listen to how many times women are apologizing for things. It's crazy.
So you two had the experience of seeing all this, all these different age groups. You've probably done some of these things. Have you two improved? Did you learn anything from this? Like, did you ever say, oh, I'm a success story because I've gotten over that thing, not worrying about how I look, or was it?
I don't know if you ever really get over it. You start, like Laura said,
improve. Have you maybe improved on your feelings on a lot of this stuff, you two?
Here's something that was an interesting comment. Someone said, I have aged out of getting groped.
Oh.
That you hit a certain age. So I think with age, but that's an odd thing too. Like, is that, obviously no one wants to get groped.
Right.
But now you're not seen as a woman when you hit a certain age, or you're not seen as mm-hmm. as a
you become
sexual
invisible.
Being. Right.
Yeah.
I think there is something that comes with age that kind of changes. Like, I these were not issues that I had thought about in a while. So to sit with younger women and to hear their sort of struggles, where I may still have some of those, I'm at a later age in life, so it's different. It's better than it was because of the experience you've lived. But I think, you know, we all grew up in this society and with these things, and you don't just go, yeah, I feel better about myself on a daily basis, but I'm not completely, you're still kind of racked with these things that you've been living with.
Yeah, and I think it's this idea of you get more comfortable in your own skin over time, hopefully, mm-hmm. which I guess for me, that's what learning about what other people are going through, what's their life like, what do they think about, what are they worried about? It makes me feel more human, because then I'm like, okay, like we're all grappling with a lot of this on some level, and we just need to like separate ourselves from the story we're told about who we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to live and settle more into being. It's a very interesting thing. And I think that's kind of what would happen if you got the younger women together with the older women, is that suddenly you give those younger women what time typically gives you. Because you get to listen to what happens later in life. So suddenly you can see, oh, maybe I don't have to worry about all this stuff. It's a waste of energy and a waste of time because it doesn't get me to where I want to go anyways.
So speaking of time, this has been happening forever. So what can we do to make it a little bit better? Are we doing things to make it a little bit better?
Are you asking what can men do?
Men or schools. I mean, so we teach kids about drug abuse. We teach about all kinds of things, sex education. But do we teach them about the effects of media? Do we teach them to be strong young women? I mean, what are we doing to make it better than we were 20 years ago, 50 years ago? Is it up to parents?
Well, I think it's up to everybody.
Yeah, okay. But what are we doing to make it better? I mean, or do you have any suggestions of what we could do to make this world better?
I think just for anybody at any, right, like we'll start to know things are better when we can see that we are trusting in women's ability to reason, that they have value in our society that's honored and supported and encouraged. So we all can participate in that, right? And when I talk about solidarity, I talk about it with women, but I also, in my mind, it's about women and men too together. You know, we have to do this together.
One of the things that women wanted to see come out of this Me Too movement or what's happening right now, they wanted to know about women-owned businesses. They wanted to like create a list in their group so that they could make sure they go there more often. They wanted to support that. They wanted women to start running for office more often. They wanted to figure out a way to do that and to make sure to support women. And I think we're seeing that more. I keep seeing headlines. More women than ever are running for office in this election season than ever have before. So in the future, Laura and I hope to have more conversations with women about how they got to where they are, why they are in leadership positions, you know, what that means to them, and kind of hear about their personal story. So that's kind of where we hope for these conversations to lead us.
Heidi, talk real fast about our group.
Oh, so Laura and I are in a group of women that kind of started organically, you know, a year and a half ago, maybe. And in a short time, we meet every
6 weeks or so.
Yeah, it's not like it's all the time. But in that short time we've been together, a number of women had made some big changes in their life. One is elected official now. Other people are contemplating running for office. They're now on commissions or boards that they weren't doing before. And it was because they had the connections of the other women there. They were trying to figure out how to do it. Once they named that they wanted to do it, then it was like, boom, boom. Oh, we'll take care of this. We know so-and-so. We'll give you a call and we'll make sure this happens. And we started talking. And so everybody comes to these groups and talks about what issues are going on with them. And I think one of the main things that I learned from the group that we're in, and I think it's kind of what we did with these focus groups, is how important listening is.
Absolutely.
It's so much more important than talking, actually, or telling your own story, because the way that we focus ours is each time we have a group, we have an interview with one of the women, and it's one person asking questions to another person. And the rest of us are not really supposed to participate besides listening. And that doesn't happen that often.
No, and it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And I have learned so much from that, just about what people are going through, what they're doing, what they're thinking, how they want to change things. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's been extremely valuable. And part of the reason for the group was this idea that we wanted to just encourage and support more women in leadership roles. And so suddenly you're listening to women talk about how they go about being a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn things.
Like, I learned recently about a woman who's taking on a leadership role in local kids hockey. And wants to really bring, we'll find out more about this later because I'm hoping to do an interview, but she wants girls hockey to get as much publicity or notice because they're working just as hard as the boys.
Yep.
And so it's going to take someone, a woman getting into a leadership role who thinks that's possible in those, because there's small ways you can do it. It doesn't have to be you're going to run for the District 8 seat. It doesn't have to be these big, huge national sort of roles. There are commissions, there are places where leaders are needed, where you have expertise that could help the world. So,
you know, and I asked you about how things are, you know, what we can do to do things better. But I just know from what you two have done with speaking with my basketball team and getting them to talk together for an hour after this is a huge success. And those are things that they will always remember somehow. Maybe put them back in the back of their mind. So, like you said, we need to have more conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And then take what we're learning and do something with it.
Yeah. So we would love to hear from you. Do you have a group of women you meet with? Do you want some advice or help on how to find a group of women that you could be a part of? We also want to know your stories. What's it like for you on the job? What's it like for you as a woman in northern Minnesota, juggling all these roles that we know that you have? Please get involved with us. Send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. And John, you're working on series 2 having to do with this, about strong women.
Yep.
Do you want to give a little preview of what we might be hearing in the next week or so?
Well, we're going to be speaking with or hearing from a woman who's has a child who has a mental illness, and it has made their life basically a living hell, and how they've adapted to that and the big decisions that they have had to make to move on in their lives. So it's going to be good.
Thanks again to the Northwest Minnesota Women's Fund for their support of this focus group project. We appreciate it, and we can't wait to hear from you. Send us an email, comments@kexe.org. Anything we forgot?
No, thank you. It was a very fascinating, great project. Thank you.